Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, you're about to hear from Rahama Bistritsky Clapman, who runs MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. They're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rahama Bistritsky Clapman here on Deb Brenner's Talk Line Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rahama and Family Matters.
Welcome back to MASS Radio Show on Family Matters. Good evening. Tonight, we have with us Menachem Poznansky, LCSW, and Yudi Wiener, who is a psychotherapist and a recovery coach. I want to welcome both of you tonight. Welcome, Menachem. Thanks for being on our show.
Thank you, Rahama. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Grateful to be here.
And welcome, Yudi. Thank you for coming on our show.
My pleasure to be part of this panel.
So this evening's show, we are focusing on the 12 steps. What are the 12 steps? There are many people out there that are familiar with what I'm speaking about, but then there are those that don't even understand what I'm talking about. Like, what's 12 steps? So the 12-step program for families of addicts, for addicts themselves, we're going to have Menachem Poznansky discuss what are the 12 steps that we're referring to. And the reason that I invited Menachem Poznansky tonight with us on our show is because he just wrote a book. Menachem, thank you for sending me the book. It was amazing to read. It was really so clear, so understanding for parents, rabbis, community leaders to read. It would be a very easy read for them. So I'd like you to talk more about your book and about how you got started in the 12 steps.
Okay, well, very grateful to be here. I have an opportunity to talk about our book. I have my co-author, Aria Bookspire, who's also a licensed clinical social worker. And Aria and I worked on the book for about 5 years. My experience with the working with people that are engaged in 12-step recovery really goes back 14, 15 years. Most significantly is in my work at The Living Room, which is a clubhouse in Brooklyn and a network for young people who are in 12-step recovery. You asked earlier what the 12 steps are, and really the 12 steps are a method of recovery from addiction, a support network of recovery that was introduced by Alcoholics Anonymous in 1939. And since that time, it's been adapted to address many issues, including those related to family members and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics, but also, you know, many, many, many other people. There's tens of millions of people actively engaged in 12-step recovery, and many Jews, obviously, many Jewish people are engaged utilizing those supports.
So, first of all, let our listeners know where they can buy your book, the name of the book. Can you share all of that with us, please?
Oh, sure. Thank you so much. So our book is called Stepping Out of the Abyss. It was published by Mosaica Press and distributed, thank God, by Feldheim. It can be found in any Jewish bookstore, as well as on Amazon and on the Feldheim website. Generally, it's as far as I understand, in most of the Jewish bookstores all over the country.
So, Stepping Out of the Abyss, how'd you come up with that name?
That's a good question. Actually, when we were grappling with the name, we really wanted to find something that was going to express what our purpose was, but also kind of grab people's attention. And one of the publishers, actually, of Kornbluth, really felt that making it clear that that we're really focusing in on a step-by-step program like the 12 Steps, felt like we wanted to use the name Step, use the word Step, and kind of came out with this idea of stepping out of the abyss because, you know, for most people engaging in a 12-step program, or for all people engaging in a 12-step program, they're coming out of abyss in many different ways, either personal tragedies that they're recovering from as well as their addictions, and really finding hope. And that's what we really feel the 12 Steps are. They're a method that enable people to step out of the hopelessness that they're in and step into a new way of living.
So for those people that are just coming on listening to our radio show tonight, this is Ruchama Bistritsky-Klantman from MASC, and we are on Family Matters. We have with us Yudi Wiener, who's a psychotherapist, recovery coach, and much, much more, actually. He has been working with families for 30 years, including in the 12 Steps program. So Yudi also, in addition, he ran support groups. He facilitated, actually, support groups for MASC for many, many years for parents. And we're going to get to Yudi in a few moments. But I'd like to first continue with our guest, Menachem Poznanski, the author of Stepping Out of the Abyss. Menachem's talking about the 12-step programs that some people are familiar with. Many, many people in the FRM community have been involved with the 12-step programs over the years that we're involved with these issues, and that's 20 years. I know you, I think, almost 20 years, Menachem. I remember your involvement with Migregos, the program in the Five Towns, now the Living Room, and I know you've been so helpful and supportive to young adults. I'd like to talk about it from the beginning. Can we talk about what happens before the young adult is introduced to the 12-step program, before the family involvement? Can we talk a little bit about what happens? Someone's on drugs, somebody goes into rehab, or somebody sees a addiction specialist or licensed therapist and then ends up at the Living Room. What is the Living Room for our listeners to know? And what is the 12 steps? How does it apply to them, please?
Okay, so, when someone's coming out of a process of addiction or a situation of active addiction, you know, one of the things that's novel about the 12 steps is that it's a method which addresses multiple issues at the same time. Because someone who's in addiction is coping with multiple challenges that stand in the way of long-term recovery, long-term abstinence and long-term recovery. So, someone who's struggling with, if we were talking about a young person struggling with drugs and alcohol, oftentimes there are other pre-existing conditions or traumas that first triggered the young person to seek out substances for relief. But nonetheless, after they've engaged the treatment process, oftentimes with an addiction specialist or going into a rehab, you know, they emerge out of those situations with some insight into why they might have started with drugs in the first place. They have some skills for dealing with the normal challenges of life. You know, one of the things that happens to addicts and alcoholics is that they get used to relying on substances to cope with normative life challenges. And when they do that, they interrupt their development of strong, you know, young adult and adult skills. So, oftentimes, the initial stage of recovery entails just learning some basic skills, learning how to live life on life's terms. But if the goal is long-term recovery, meaning the goal being, which is you know, our mission at the Living Room is to help young adults achieve long-term recovery, not just to get clean for 6 months or for a year, but to really establish a long-term recovery that's sustainable. If that's the goal, then really the person needs to not only initially establish a baseline of abstinence and recovery, but really begin to live life. So this is really what's novel about the 12 steps, is that it really creates a structure, a support structure and a communal structure. It also is an acute program of self-development and growth. It does both, because the programs include the 12-step programs like the AA or NA, and those fellowships is what they're called. And then it also includes the actual 12-step program, which is a process of self-reflection and personal growth that's based on spirituality. It's based on bringing God, an experience of God as you understand him, into your life as a resource and an inspiration to help you transcend your challenges and live a meaningful service.
So let me ask you, can you, for our listeners, describe the 12 steps? Can you tell us the 12 steps so that we understand just what they are, you know, let go and let God, Hashem? Can you go through the 12 steps, please?
Well, if I'm going to paraphrase them, really the steps begin, the first step begins with a firm admission, where a person admits to something to themselves that they already know, which is that the problem that they're struggling with, their addiction, you know, has them lit, that they don't have power, they don't have the power to decide not to be an addict, and that their addiction and that the circumstances surrounding their addiction have made their lives unmanageable. And that therefore, even though they need to take action and some personal responsibility over some of their challenges, they also need help. And then the steps move on from there. You know, step two, entails a person developing a sense of awareness of who God is for them, for a person who's coming from a firm background. It might be, you know, who Hashem is and what his opinion is about them. What are the things that block him from letting Hashem into his heart and into his life, God into his heart and into his life, and a sense of hopefulness that he actually can get better. Step three entails the decision, developing a sense of willingness to really take action on those things that are within his power, specifically to take the rest of the 12 steps, but more than that, to take ownership of those parts of his life that he has the ability to influence over, and really letting go of those parts that are outside of his sphere of influence. And then four and five entail a process of self-inventory and sharing that inventory with another human being and with that person's perception of God. And six and seven, people develop a sense of awareness and a willingness to live, you know, a more elevated life. Oftentimes, people have a tendency to kind of feel stuck in their problems. Maybe they have a sense that they could maybe manage their problems at times, but to have a sense that they could really live a transcendent life is beyond their frame of reference. And six and seven is where they develop the willingness to live, you know, above their problems, to be as perfect as God would like them to be, or as imperfect as God would like them to be. And eight and nine is a process of amends, which is really identifying the areas of harm, how they've harmed other people, and trying to see how they can make that right. Oftentimes by acknowledging those harms to the people that they've harmed, sometimes not, because it's just not possible without hurting the other person. And then what we call in our book, The Living Steps, 10, 11, and 12, which is really, those steps are very familiar with anybody who's engaged in a lifestyle of Torah, which is a process of consistent self-inventory, you know, cheshbon nefesh, that's what it would be called in Jewish terms. You would also have, in 11, there's a process utilizing prayer and meditation, which in Jewish terms might be hisbodedus and hisbonenus, to think deeply about one's life, to think reflectively about where a person wants to go, and to engage a process of prayer. And then in step 12, to engage helping other people, and also trying to live spiritual principles in every area of your life. All things that, as Jews, we're very familiar with. So that's really, you know, in a nutshell, the process of the 12 steps. And what the 12-step programs have found, that if, you know, an addict takes the initiative to welcome these steps into their lives, they can transform their life from one of self-centered fear and ego obsession you're really grappling with moment-to-moment management of their impulses to a life of service and focusing on being a channel of God's light and allowing God to love others through them, allowing Hashem to express his love for others around him through him as an open channel. And that's ostensibly where we want to get, where somebody wants to get with 12 steps.
Right. So can we address how that is with the from people? How do the from people relate to the 12 steps? Because there are some people that say, well, it's not Jewish. And I know Rabbi Dr. Tversky stands firm with his explanation on it. I was wondering, I know he wrote the foreword in your book. I was wondering if you could elaborate for our listeners tonight, how are the 12 steps used by a from person? And the name of your book, again, I'd like to share, is Stepping Out of the Abyss, which is available at all the Hebrew bookstores around the country and on Amazon. So, yes, let's talk about that resistance from people about doing the 12 steps, getting involved with the 12 steps, because they do, usually the meetings are held in a church, next door, downstairs in a church basement. And today we know, Menachem, you, I, and Yuri know that that's not the only place these meetings are being held at. So can you share more about that point, please?
Sure. I mean, I've spent a lot of my time, thank God, trying to help educate people on this. You know, you and I talked earlier about one of the reasons that we got to writing the book, which was we were at a community meeting. I remember you there. It was already 15 years ago, about, and there was a lot of resistance to the 12 steps for many of the reasons that you described. And one of the things I pointed out at the meeting, I was a young guy then, and I was a little chutzpahdik of me, but, young people have a tendency to do that. And I asked the people in the room if they'd ever been exposed or read the literature that lay out the 12 steps. And most of the people in the room that were opposed to 12-step programs had never really read the literature. They might have read the actual text of the 12 steps itself. They make assumptions about the program because, like you said, many meetings are held in churches, which for the most part, just as that, for that, in terms of that piece, is a matter of function and convenience because churches are happy to rent out their ancillary spaces like their basements at a reduced cost. The programs, the 12-step programs work very hard to be non-denominational from the beginning of their founding. The founders of the 12 steps really wanted and focused on not being aligned with any, the language they use is any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. So Rabbi Tversky obviously has been the trailblazer for this, and we were very fortunate that he agreed to write a chapter in the book where he discusses the idea, the word spirituality, which can be an ambivalent word, and he talks about how spirituality is a Jewish concept and how Judaism looks at it. He draws on a Ramban and really sets the tone for the book as we talk about spirituality. Another rabbi who's done some amazing work recently is Shace Taub, wrote a book called The God of Understanding. And we see our book as a companion copy to the many works of Rabbi Tversky and to Rabbi Taub's book. But one of the points that have been made is, first of all, the 12 steps are based on foundational spiritual principles that one finds in any religion. And it's not surprising that those basic foundational principles all founded Judaism because, you know, the reality is that Judaism stands at the root of most of the world religions. It's not coincidence that you look into the 12 steps and all you find are foundational Torah concepts. The other thing to consider is that, I'm not coming as a rabbinic person. I've obviously spent a lot of time on this. I've had an opportunity to sit in on conversations between Gedolim that just have discussed these concepts and to hear them and discuss them. Actually, one of the impetuses for the book was also an individual who was approaching Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael to try to rule against the people attending the Tisza programs. And we felt that we had to publish something that was comprehensive to address the issue. So the issue is consistent. But one of the things we find is that addicts are in a process which is life threatening, and they need to take action in order to repair their lives and to achieve real recovery, long term recovery, not only to stay clean from drugs for a couple of months or a couple of weeks or a couple of days, but really to establish a recovery that can last years in a lifetime, and that's a matter of life and death more often than not. And unfortunately, the last couple of years, the prevalence of drug addiction and substance abuse is getting younger and younger, and more and more broad, and the deaths are more and more present. I've been to more funerals in the last year and a half, 2 years than I can remember in all my career combined. So there's a reality, which is that, and this is not just for the 12 steps, it's for any recovery program, but or any type of recovery program, but that it's critical that addicts recover. That it's life threatening if they don't. And as Jews, we have an obligation to bring into our lives those things that are going to allow us to live and to live live fully. And for addicts to engage the 12 steps give them life, and they only create an avenue towards Yiddishkeit. One of the contributors to our book was Rabbi Yoni Fisher, who's Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael and Yeshiva Matisyahu, who's gone Menahel at Shar Yashiv and Menahel for many years. And he wrote a beautiful article in the back in the appendix of the book where he addresses some of the philosophical questions that Talmidim of his have had that are in 12-step programs. And it's a very nice article. And one of the things he said is that one of the interesting things about the 12 steps is that they are an avenue to take you where you want to go spiritually. And if a person's looking to establish a relationship with God that is filled with Yiddishkeit, the 12 steps will only bring him to that place. And if a person's looking to establish a relationship with God because he's not ready to engage Yiddishkeit, but he desperately needs and wants a relationship with God that doesn't require him to engage in the entirety of a level of practice, then the 12 steps provide that as well. From my experience, it's just an experiential observation, over the long haul, people that fully engage 12-step programs are brought closer and more earnestly to Yiddishkeit. Actually in the non-religious community, there's a very large contingency of people that have become Bali Tshuva specifically as a result of their 12-step work. Obviously, when you're dealing with kids that come from observant backgrounds, there's other challenges that come along the way. But the 12 steps are an amazing tool that help a young person or an adult establish a vibrant relationship with Hashem, with God, and one that is not fixed, one that is only growing and developing. One of the really novel and amazing things about the 12 steps is the idea of a God of our understanding, which is oftentimes very confused, particularly as it relates to this issue of religious people worrying that the 12 steps are going to take away their children from Judaism. And one of the novel things they do is that the approach of the 12 steps is to say, listen, we don't need to talk about what you don't believe in God. Let's talk about what you do believe in God. And begin there to establish a relationship. And then have the open-mindedness and willingness to let that relationship go wherever you feel like, meaning you feel in your heart earnestly that it could go over time. Meaning, have an open mind. Don't be locked down in anything. and have an open mind to have a meaningful and progressive and process of growth, and that's extremely enriching. And while there's a vulnerability in that, my observation is such that that vulnerability, you know, vulnerabilities have a tendency to have payoff. You know, the more vulnerable you are, the more opportunity there is for meaningfulness. So, you know, the people that are scared, you know, there's to validate the fact that there's, it's understandable why they are, but many of their fears are the result of either misconception, confusion, or fears that are really rooted in other things. And that for many parents, as they'll learn in the 12-step programs that are for family members, that they really need to learn to trust Hashem, to turn those things over to Hashem, and to focus in on prayer, and to focus on their parts, and to allow the process to take hold. And you know, if what I'm saying wasn't true, for a publisher to create a book for Jewish 12 steps, you know, to explain it that comprehensive manner, I think that the growing from 12-step community speaks to the fact that the 12 steps is a vibrant option for somebody who's committed to Yiddishkeit, and it's a vibrant option for somebody who's experienced negative and painful things in their lifetime that they attribute to religion, even though oftentimes it's religious people that hurt them. And the 12 steps, if anything, gives them the opportunity to heal those things, to work through those resentments, and to open their hearts to a relationship with Hashem and a relationship with Torah and Yiddishkeit. Actually, as a final thought on it, if you open the literature, and this is oftentimes where the misconceptions come from, the literature in the 12-step programs are very supportive of people, if not maybe at the beginning, but in their process to really, you know, re-examine and re-engage the religion of origin, the religion of their childhood, at the very least to come to terms with it. A healthy, good recovery is one where the person has at least come to terms with their past and their history and their religion of origin. But oftentimes, obviously, because Yiddishkeit is so rich and so full of meaningful experiences, people, when they get to that place where they're able to overcome, you know, their resentments and their pain and their trauma, they're able to re-engage Yiddishkeit from a totally new place, in a totally new way. That's a lot of what we're doing at the Living Room, you know, is opening those pathways. We have had really amazing and wonderful, meaningful experiences with young people who are in recovery. Really, sometimes, and Edie can share this because he's been on our retreats, you know, sometimes on our retreats, I just feel like, you know, like I wish every Yid can experience this kind of Kabbalah Shabbos, the sense of openness, the sense of camaraderie and brotherhood, and Ahavas Yisrael is just beyond something that's describable. You know, in a few weeks, I'll just plug a little bit. Vadrego's puts together a Rosh Hashanah retreat in a few weeks, and the Living Room has the opportunity to partner. And the environment there is, in many ways, I think, ideal. It's a completely, fully open-minded and accepting environment, where everyone can feel themselves and really connect Hashem in the deepest of ways. And the 12 steps has a lot to do with that. It creates that opportunity, that it creates a fertile ground for a Jew to connect, reconnect, or connect for the first time to Yiddishkeit.
Well, I know personally that MASC has been involved with Madrego's from its inception, and we have sponsored their Shavuos retreats over the years, and I know how amazing those retreats have been, and I heard from friends and neighbors that do go to the Rosh Hashanah retreat that you're referring to, and they come back, the volunteers, they help out, and they come back so inspired. It's an amazing retreat, and anyone interested in attending that retreat, the Rosh Hashanah retreat that Menachem Poznanski is speaking about, please call MASC at 718-758-0400, and we will connect you to the people that are taking care of the retreat for Rosh Hashanah. I'm glad you brought up the retreat for another reason, because family members get to see up close from another perspective. Like, they see other family members going there. They partake in meals with other people that are struggling with whatever addictions. And they themselves, family members that suffer from children or spouses or any loved ones that are struggling with addiction, when they spend a few days Rosh Hashanah together with so many hundreds of people that are there together for the same reason, they learn so much from each other that they go home and they have new energies that they're able to then help their own child, you know, participate in ongoing 12-step meetings they attend. And Yuri will talk more about the parents, but I want to focus more, you said, on the younger kids. How old are the kids that are showing up at these Rosh Hashanah events now different than it was when we started out, Menachem? By Mask, it's been 20 years. By you, maybe 17, 16, whatever. They used to be 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds. You want to tell our listeners what's going on out there on the streets today, please?
Well, you know, I mean, fortunately, many of the, or unfortunately, you know, many of the people attending retreats are already individuals that, you know, have grown to a place in their life where they really are committed to growth, to development and growth. So the retreats, which are wonderful, and there's 500 people there, and there's many families that just come because they want to be supportive, and also they want a, you know, wonderful spiritual environment along with the youth. But I alluded earlier that really the game has changed in the last really 2.5 years, and this is a general population thing, but it's also a Jewish and Orthodox culture thing, which is that young people are engaging substance use and substance abuse at much younger ages. The availability of substances is much more broad. And the cross-section of people that are using substances is much broader. Whereas in the past, the kids that were using, the young people that were using, were oftentimes the outliers in the class, oftentimes people that had other challenges in their life. But today, that's not the case anymore. Today, you know, there's substance use and abuse in every yeshiva that I know of, and which is alarming, obviously. And the solution, and many of these yeshiva high schools in particular, have begun to recognize this, which is that it's not a solution to just throw them out, because if they started throwing out every kid that tried drugs, they would have very few kids left in the school. And many people, the human tendency to stick our heads in the sand like an ostrich is there and prevalent, and people don't want to believe it, and they want to think it's the other person. But I can just tell you, being a parent of teenagers and someone who's worked with young people for, the past, 17 years, the prevalence is there. There's many people using drugs. And the other thing that's kind of become alarming over the last couple of years is that the transition from what are called more recreational drugs, like marijuana, obviously alcohol as a recreational substance that people use, and then some of the lighter, so to speak, less acutely dangerous drugs, that kids experiment with, and the transition from there to more illicit drugs like cocaine and heroin, opioids, benzodiazepine, barbiturates, Xanax, Klonopin, drugs of those sorts. It's very, very quick. Young people don't really have to wait long to transition from experimenting with marijuana, getting into a little bit of trouble, and they immediately go into very illicit drug use. In the last like I said, 2.5 years, I've been, like, even myself, shocked at times. I'm sitting with a young person who's 14 or 15 years old, and they're talking about heroin use like it's normal, you know. And when I started in this field, and before that, when I was, in my adolescence, you know, heroin was something that wasn't something that was in anybody's thoughts. Heroin, opioids. I mean, today you have a lot of prescription opioids that lead to heroin, but use of those drugs was kind of beyond our frame of reference. Today it's not at all. And because the drug use kind of crosses all the boundaries, you have a lot of kids hanging out together. You know, my wife and I had an experience a few weeks ago where there were some kids, and they were making some trouble in the park, and we went over to try to help them out. And we were just talking to them, and they were high and a little drunk, and we were just kind of monitoring to make sure that they were okay. And we just talked to them, asking them questions, and one of the things we noticed is that the kids came from every type of background and every type of school. They're all hanging out together because the common denominator is they don't want to get drunk, they don't want to drink, they don't want to get high, and it's become normal. And so the boundaries are kind of, which is, I guess, in some way nice that there's more achdus, but it's not coming from a good place, unfortunately. There's really, you see a very quick transition into really illicit drug use. Now, specifically, I don't want to glaze over this because there's a tendency to do that, but specifically for those individuals that have trauma, be it emotional trauma from, neglect or verbal abuse, or, God forbid, some type of physical or sexual trauma, you know, and they're in that environment where it's become normative to, for sure normative, to smoke marijuana or to use alcohol, and then to use illicit drugs to, you know, start oftentimes with pills, and then it transitions into some of the harder drugs. And they're in tremendous emotional distress because of their trauma, and because they're cut off from the most meaningful things in their life, which is their religion, their God, prayer, all those really meaningful spiritual things that they would get so much out of. They're cut off because they associate their pain with religion. So they're really outliers. They're outside, and they get exposed to these drugs, and they spiral out of control very rapidly, very, very rapidly, so that there's a whole new market of treatment programs for kids that are not even at a level of addiction. They're just using substances so pervasively that they need to be in a treatment program, which, thank God, there's been more and more treatment programs that are emerging, and that's why a program like MASC, a program like Amudim Relief, all these wonderful programs that help steer parents in the right direction. The right referral is so key and critical. A program like MASC, not to give you too much, but a program like MASC has the experience to be able to determine, you know, where somebody's needs lie, and to be able to direct the parents of those children where they need to go. This is a critical piece, because oftentimes a young person does not get the right help, and they're in the wrong treatment environment, and sometimes it's too late before you know. Sometimes it's not too late, but you create new trauma of, being exposed to challenging things, or, you know, so going to the right treatment is critically important today more than ever, because the environment around mental health, substance abuse, addiction is so much more complex today, especially as we're facing, you know, the realities of the abuses that do occur in our community, unfortunately, and which the community has courageously begun to face wonderfully, but nonetheless, to not fall into the pattern of just thinking about prevention, which is super important, prevention, but also to think about the poor souls that have been harmed, and to get them the help that they need so they can thrive and live beautiful and wonderful, meaningful, happy lives.
Yes, you know, I'm glad you ended with that, because just this week we got a phone call from a young man that just had a little baby, Baruch Hashem, that started by us several years ago, that we referred to a wonderful program, wonderful therapist, helped him get the help to be able to get married, and now just had a baby, and we want to wish him anonymously, of course. Everything is confidential on Masks Helpline and by you, Menachem, very much so. But we just want to publicly say Mazel Tov to him for really sticking it out. It wasn't easy. Went to an inpatient program, went to his therapist, went to 12-step meeting, and Baruch Hashem, today he is the father of a baby, a beautiful baby, so Mazel Tov. And we have a wedding coming up. We are always invited to simchas from different people that have come through our doors, that have called on our helpline. And I know, Menachem, so have you been many, 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 many times over the years. So there is positive to share. Can we give hope? You mentioned the word hope before, and Mask's mission is to offer hope to parents and to family members that are struggling. So I'd like you to talk about the hope that you can offer to any young person out there listening, that they could reach out for help and hope.
Well, I'll say this. I was meeting with a set of parents last night, and one of the things I said to them is that I think oftentimes we take for granted how much we have, how grateful, how much abundance we have here in New York, in specific. There's so much support, and also so much vibrant life going on, specifically in those areas for those people that are emerging out of addiction. In the living room, we have a very vibrant community of young people that are engaged in life. They are going to school. You know, we had, just get into small stories, but one of the girls that started with us at 15, 16 years old, thank God this year, graduated with honors from Columbia University. Another young man got into Columbia University. And these people that are, that were written off. And now they're living vibrant, meaningful lives. Young people getting married, which is really meaningful. Actually, in the living room, one of the, I'll tell you two kind of meaningful caveats that we've had over the last couple of years is, one is we've actually developed a retreat for couples, for young couples, because we have so many couples in our network, which for the most part are individuals that started in our program and established a healthy life. Of recovery and meaningful life of Yiddishkeit, and have gone on to get married and to establish families and have the opportunity to connect and get together with other families. And for the past 3 years, we've had over 30 families, young families, on our retreats, which is like 50 or 60 kids, young kids. And oftentimes I look at those kids and I think that these are 50, 60 kids that are either would not be here. I'm talking about young children. They either would not be here or they would be growing up in a house of addiction, being traumatized, another generation of trauma, and the opportunity to reverse that trend and to create a vibrancy of life. One of the really meaningful things we did this year was the living room organized a trip. I shared this another time that I spoke for Amudim, but it was just such a wonderful, amazing thing. That we had 17 young people that raised money to go to Eretz Yisrael. We were there for 4 days. It was no vacation. It was back-to-back. We spent the entire time on and off of a bus, visiting treatment centers, going to other 12-step meetings in the area, encouraging the young people in Eretz Yisrael that are engaged in 12-step programs and rehabs. And that was taking off of work and paying their own money and raising money from their parents. And it was just one of the most meaningful experiences I've ever had as a professional. And so life is real. And that was a small group. And, just this past summer, 8 weeks ago, we had a retreat, 6 weeks ago, actually. We had 90 young people on the retreat. And it was just a vibrant community of recovery. So for those parents that are feeling hopeless, there's a lot of hope. It can be a journey and a process, and it's critical that you have patience with that process. But the hope is definitely there, and the situation is definitely serious. And for any of those young people that are looking for help, the help is so abundant. It's amazing. It's really wonderful. From organizations and professionals, but also from individuals that have transcended their challenges and established amazing lives. We have numerous young couples that have every Shabbos, tables full of other young people. It doesn't require an institution to organize. It's just people that want to help. And the 12 steps, for me, it's one of the things that's meaningful about it is I see the role that the 12 steps plays in that. You talked about the critical part of community and feeling not isolated, not alone. It's so critical, both for parents and for kids, to not fall into that pattern, that abyss of isolation. And the meaningfulness of being around other people who understand what you're going through and have climbed out, oftentimes the analogy that's given is that, sometimes an addict's in the abyss and another addict walks by. He says, please, can you get me out? And the addict says, well, I can't get you out, but I've been there before and I can tell you how you can get out yourself. And that's the essence of the 12 steps, is that it empowers the person to take ownership of the areas of their life in their control, and in that way have a healthy relationship with Hashem, where the areas of the life that are out of their control are handled through emuna and bitachon, through faith and trust, prayer and reflection, and then on the other side, accountability and determination, and even willpower to face those things that are most challenging in life. And the hope is there, and oftentimes it's scary to be vulnerable and to ask for help and to receive help, but learning to receive help graciously is one of the key critical components to recovering and to establishing a life of recovery.
Well, I sure hope that those that are listening that didn't understand the 12 steps have a clearer picture now and go out and order the book. We have Menachem Poznanski, the author of Stepping Out of the Abyss. You can get it on Amazon and in all the Sfarim stores. And I'm speaking to our listeners, to parents, to rabbis and rebbetzins, to teachers, to community leaders, everyone out there. There are kids that, lo aleinu, are dying every day. We must help these families. We must help them understand that there is hope and help, and the 12 step is a very big part of the recovery in these young adults' lives when they are addicted to drugs or alcohol, gambling, etc., all negative behaviors. Parents need to learn more about it. I want to thank you, Menachem Poznanski, for being on tonight with us. And I'd like to let everyone know, anyone that needs to reach Menachem could call 718-758-0400. And we will connect you to Menachem. Thank you, Menachem, for joining us this evening. And I want to wish you best of luck in all you do.
Thank you so much, Rachama, for all the work that you do. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this great book. Like you said, the book is, I don't want people to misassociate it as only for addicts. It's really, we wrote it for all the people that love addicts, so they can better understand recovery and better embrace those people that are engaged in 12-step programs, those people that require 12-step programs, and guide them towards a vibrant Yiddishkeit. It's for, like you said, rabbanim, rabbitzins, parents, mental health professionals, as a hopefully a meaningful resource to help move on the dialogue and continue the great hope that's already going on to expand it more and more from success to success. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Menachem, and have a good Shabbos. So for all the listeners out there, we've been anxiously waiting to hear from Yudi Wiener. Yudi, I wanted to discuss the parents. I know parents struggle with a child being on drugs or alcohol or gambling, and they're faced with so many decisions that they know nothing about. And then they're told, while we get your child help and put him into rehab, you meanwhile need to go with your wife or husband to a 12-step meeting. And Yudi, you facilitated 12-step meetings for MASC for so many years. Our strongest groups were our 12-step meetings for parents. Can you elaborate on that so parents can get an understanding what the benefits are when learning the 12 steps, what their child or loved one or spouse is learning inpatient? Why is it so important that parents learn it as well?
One story stands out in my mind. When I was working in inpatient at the Atkins Center, there was a Hasidic family that met their daughter for the first time in 30 days. The daughter decided to keep Shabbos for the first time. And when the parents met the daughter with me, the daughter told the parents, "Mommy and Tati, I kept Shabbos this week." The father said, "Ah, you finally are doing it our way." Needless to say, the daughter was very, very upset. I don't want to say what she said to them, but the parents were not, they didn't have the skills to understand that the daughter made an effort to do something, and the parents were not getting enough support to understand how they should respond to their daughter trying to be in recovery and trying to be on a spiritual path. Parents need to understand that any professional that works with a child or young adult can do whatever they can to help the child. But the family constellation of support and understanding the problem and what they can and what they must not do is essential. And the families must get the support from groups, from Al-Anon groups, and from other professionals that work with the family situation.
Yudi, yes. How long have you been helping families? What is it, 30 years?
I've been doing so for 30 years, yes.
Right. So have you seen things changing for the FRIM community from your perspective? Are more parents? I know at MASC, our groups are, you know, 35 people could be in a group. What about the 12-step arena? Are there more parents that are more comfortable now reaching out to you?
Yeah, there are more groups available, and there are more parents open to understand the nature of addiction and the nature of the spiritual problems that these children have in their families. They are reaching out more. They're more open to go to Al-Anon meetings. There are Al-Anon meetings all over the city. They're in the five towns. They're in Brooklyn. They're in Muncie. And we even have some in Israel that I helped facilitate. And the parents still remember the training that they received to understand of accepting the child for who they are and not to try to judge them on the criteria that they were brought up with, but that no longer works for their children at this point.
Yes, kids are dying. So many neshamas. So painful. Every day there are stories about children, young kids, that Lo Aleinu are dying so young from addiction. And parents and community needs to recognize that we need to do everything we can to support these families, to be there for them. Stigma free, we're working towards stigma free. Everybody needs to support your neighbor, whoever your neighbor is that is struggling with a child that is has an addiction. Be their friends, offer to help them, go and speak to the other children that are suffering and are embarrassed and are closing their front shades because they don't want neighbors to know. We need to recognize that it's everybody's problem. It's not just one family in one community anymore. Everybody knows a neighbor that is struggling with some mental health issue and or addiction. And we need to take off the mask of ourselves and our communities and get the help and reach out to the 12-step program so that family members can get have the support for their recovery. So if anyone wants to speak with Yudi Wiener, you can reach him at 718-758-0400. And Yudi, you also are, besides being a recovery coach, you have a private practice in the five towns.
Correct.
So if anybody wants to meet with Yudi, you always can call Masks Helpline. Again, write the number down, maybe for yourself, maybe for a neighbor, someone sitting next to you in shul. Our number, confidential helpline, 718-758-0400, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Call with your questions anonymously. Just pick up the phone and call so we can help with referrals, support groups, recovery coaches, 12-step meetings, tell you more about Menachem's book, Stepping Out of the Abyss. You can get it on Amazon. Please call about Dr. Tursky's meeting, Dr. Trisha Tia's meeting, Sarah Kahan's meeting. Call MASK with any of your questions, and we will help get you. If we do not have the answer, we will forward you to the right place, the right organization. There are many people out there, many organizations, and we could connect you wherever it is that may be able to help you with your loved ones, whatever issues you may be facing. So, Yudi, what would be your last message right now tonight before we hang up to the people out there, parents, about hope and about 12 steps?
My message is that there is hope and you're not alone. And any question that you're not sure of in our state, what's going on in the world, and especially in our community, feel free, make the call, ask the question. Don't be embarrassed. Most families do have issues, and there are people willing, like MASK and other organizations and other professionals, that can guide you and help you to make you understand you are not alone in this problem. It's our problem, and we are here to help you. Feel free, any question you have, to please call, and you will be guided to getting the proper help.
Thank you, Yudi. It was wonderful having you on. Thank you for always being there for MASK parents, for facilitating groups. You facilitated MASK's group in Israel so many times and here in New York. And you're always available to meet with families. So I want to say a yashar koach to you publicly for always being available to families.
Anything I can do for MASK, I am the MASK man.
Thank you. And I want to just wish all our listeners, have a good evening, have a good Shabbos. Call MASK 718-758-0400. Thank you and good night.
Thank you, Chama. Thank you, Zev. All the best.
KCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.
It is time when bold knights and bawdy wenches gather to feast and frolic. It is time when the royal court and naughty courtesans mix and mingle. It is time for the New York Renaissance Fair. Come, shed the weight of today and step into our legendary realm. See swords flashing in the sun, hear the ring of steel, and feel the excitement as knights on horses thunder into the arena. Join in the revelry. Shop exquisite crafts and savor your choice of fine food and drink. Join us in the joyful festivities at the Renaissance Fair. Real people, real food, real fun. Live it up at the New York Renaissance Fair.
The New York Renaissance Fair. Open Saturdays, Sundays, and Labor Day Monday, August 5th through October 1st in Sterling Forest, Tuxedo Park. Buy discount tickets at Walgreens and Duane Reade. Performance schedules and other info at renfair.com. Save 20% on adult tickets this weekend. Print a coupon at renfair.com.